This is Football Nation. Todd DeVries and Bill Enright bring you the latest trends from the NFL, headlines, stats, fantasy previews, and more right here on Football Nation.
Why don't we, in the final minutes here, Bill, why don't we do some quick predictions and previews here. Let's start with the Ravens and Broncos. That is the first game on Saturday at 4:30, correct?
Now, remember, this is the game they played just a few weeks ago in Week 15. It was the first game the Ravens had without their offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron, and their offense just looked terrible. They didn't score a touchdown until the fourth quarter. I'm picking the Broncos. I'm not going to say a blowout, but I'm never going to be watching this game and say, wow, the Broncos could lose.
I'm calling a blowout here.
Think blowout?
37-17. Ray Lewis will not be dancing after this one.
I think the Broncos win. 34-17 was the last one. You're going with 37-17. I think it's going to be, I'll go with 31-20.
All right, I'm writing it down.
I'll go out on the limb.
What?
Ravens win the game.
Oh, please.
Ridiculous.
Just had to get it on the air, that's all.
Bill, hold on a second. All right, give me two reasons
well,
why.
Well, Kevin, listen, this could work both ways. You could look like a genius, and you could have the sound clip of me saying ridiculous and not giving you a second shot of saying anything, or it could work horribly against you. So, you know, tread very carefully here.
It's like the
you
other...
think the Ravens are going to win the game. Make your point, but just remember, next week we can come out and say,
No, I know.
Our idiot producer. All right, so what's your prediction?
You know, as much as I don't like the Ravens' defense, I think Peyton's going to throw a couple picks now, whether they're kind of unfortunate deflected passes or whatever.
Manning in the shotgun on third down and 7. Looks to the right, fires, and it is broken up and intercepted. Torrey Graham, 30, 20, he's going to the house, and the Ravens have taken the lead!
I can see him throwing a couple interceptions in this game, and I think that's going to be the difference.
Manning in the shotgun. Looks left, nothing there, looks over the middle. Now he's chased out of the pocket. Kruger on the run. Manning's pass is intercepted. Torrey Graham! Torrey Graham with a pick at the 45-yard line, and the Ravens take over!
Oh, man.
Snow?
No. 20% snow. The high is 19.
Yeah, that's cold. Oh, and I think that affects Manning a little bit, too.
Ravens bring a blitz up the middle. Manning, pocket collapsing, and he's going to be sacked. Ball comes loose, and the Ravens have it. The Ravens have the ball inside the Denver 40.
Bill, we're talking to a Patriots fan here who wants a home game in the AFC title.
I do.
Let's move on.
No timeout. One snap. Placement down. Tucker has it on its way, and it is good. And the Baltimore Ravens, in improbable fashion, in double overtime, have beaten the Denver Broncos 38-35.
Hello and welcome to Football Nation on Patriots.com Radio. Bill Enright here with Todd DeVries. And Todd, you heard the new rejoin, the new and improved Football Nation rejoin, which features our fearless producer, Kevin Collins, correctly picking the Baltimore Ravens to upset the Denver Broncos. Todd, you and I were wrong. Kevin was right. Let's give him some props.
Total props to Kevin. However, Bill and Kevin, I know you're listening. I know you're listening this time around, Kevin, right? Bill, all year long, we've had the same rejoin. And this is the one week that he goes out of his way to make a rejoin. I wonder why he did that.
Kid's got to make himself look good.
Special week.
the bosses, I'm sure, are listening. Everyone's pumped up.
4-0.
Patriots are
4-0
in
this
the
weekend.
AFC Championship.
Well, you know, as we were watching these games, I was getting text messages from Kevin.
Yeah, a lot of text messages from Kevin.
We don't get a lot of text messages. You know, we get one or two a weekend or something from Kevin during the games.
Yeah.
It was just like, hey, look at me. Look how good I am. My predictions are unbelievable.
Now,
hot
Todd,
takes. Flaming hot takes.
Kevin's picks were 4-0, but Todd, your 8-year-old son was also 4-0. So, I mean, really, how difficult was it?
Well, it was pretty difficult for me. I was 1-3. I was terrible. And luckily for Patriots fans, I was 1-3 because they were the one.
They were the only win.
I'm just talking straight up. Forget the lines.
No.
I was straight up. I only picked one winner. It was the Patriots. That was terrible. Not good. My 8-year-old son, literally, he picks all the games just for fun. But he has like all the little team helmets, and he puts them together every week, and he writes on a little scrap piece of paper his little score predictions.
Right.
He was 4-0, and he was looking at me like, Dad.
You suck, Dad.
But yeah, Todd, you've been on the, you were on the Kaepernick train, right? And because I remember, didn't you kind of collide with Kerry, and Kerry thought, oh, this is going to be the game that, you know, Alex Smith, you know, should be the quarterback, and they're going to lose because of that. And so Todd was right on that, but for sure.
Well, I still thought they were going to probably lose the game.
You picked the Packers, but you picked the Packers because they were your Super Bowl pick to start the season. Isn't that
correct? I kind of wanted to stick with my Super Bowl picks.
Yeah.
You know, they were both still alive.
And
by the way, my Super Bowl pick was Patriots-Packers, and I had Patriots winning it, so.
So you got half of it still alive.
Still half of it.
Which ain't bad because there's only four teams left.
But yeah, I actually love Kaepernick. I followed him. I follow college football very closely. I actually interviewed the guy. I was actually the first guy outside of Nevada. He went to Nevada to interview him. I was the first quote unquote national guy to interview him. And he was very thankful. And actually, Bill and Kevin, he actually told me. He said, "Someday, if I ever make it big, I'll remember this." So I got to shoot him an email after the season and
see
what that means. Maybe I'll get some tickets to a game or something. Fly me out.
Guest segment on this show.
Yeah. So, yeah, Kevin, I've been following his career for quite a while. I mean, but obviously what he did on Saturday night was just epic, and that was crazy.
What did you call him, like the Cyborg Gazelle or something like that?
Yeah, that was
gave him some crazy
nickname. Cyborg Gazelle.
Nickname. Why hasn't that stuck in the NFL, I wonder?
It's not as good as the hamster.
I'm hearing a lot of Captain America now. That seems to be the one that's going around. So
Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe the Patriots will wind up playing him again. A little retribution.
But it was a tough week for our poor dear friend Kerry Byrne.
And we'll hop him on later in the show.
And he was great. He took it like a pro. He was tweeting. It was all in good fun, but the poor guy.
Here's the thing. When you're as bold and when you go outside the regular status quo of any NFL writer and make the kind of bold statements that Kerry does, sometimes you're going to get bit in the butt. And that's what happened to him this weekend. But you know what? He takes it like a champ.
He's been more right than he has been wrong.
Exactly.
Over the years.
Exactly.
But we'll talk to Kerry about all that. But hey, just all in all, guys. I mean, seriously, we always talk about the divisional round. The divisional weekend is kind of being the most exciting weekend, you know, leading up to the weekend anyway. In the whole NFL calendar, and my God, it lived up to the expectations and then some.
It was ridiculously awesome. Tremendous, exciting. It was just a great weekend of NFL action.
And you know what? Honestly, I mean, the Patriots game was kind of the least entertaining of the whole bunch from a national perspective.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Obviously, Patriots fans loved it. But quite frankly, I don't know if I could have taken a fourth game like that. Mm. I was worn out.
Right.
No?
You're almost happy. You're almost happy the Patriots.
I was trying to imagine, the Seattle-Atlanta game was going on during our pregame show here.
So you didn't get to watch that?
Well, no, we were watching in the studio. And they actually showed, even though their game ended pretty close to the start of our game and we were into warm-ups and I was actually out on the field for the last 30 seconds, but we cut into it on the jumbo just to show the people that were actually in the stadium what happened. And I just could not imagine being like a diehard fan of either of those teams, especially the Falcons being in that building.
It was
crazy. And, you know, you watch them blow, what was it, 27-7?
20-0 and 27-7.
And I think, Bill and I, we picked the Falcons. Todd, did you pick the Seahawks?
Yes.
Can't remember. All right. Yeah. So, and I think Bill and I just remember Bill and I kind of being in lockstep with, you know, this is their whole year. This is a franchise-defining game. They put everything into it. They got the number one seed. They have to prove that they can win a playoff game. And to blow a lead like that, you know, I can only imagine the avalanche of bad memories, bad feelings from the past. And then to pull it out like that, I mean, I would have had a heart attack.
The finish of that game was just amazing. I mean, you think about
and
the second,
filled
second
with
half.
Coaching gaffes, Bill. Filled.
And we're going to get into all the coaching gaffes. There were a lot of coaching gaffes, not just in that Falcons-Seahawks game.
Yeah, there were.
The Denver Bronco game, there was
some
really questionable play calls, some terrible performances by some of their defensive backs. Raheem Moore comes to mind.
We've been saying that the Falcons are kind of a paper champion. You know, they haven't proved anything yet.
Right.
I have to admit, man, that while the two passes there at the end were huge, Am I crazy for thinking that I'm not impressed with them still?
No, you're not crazy at all. I actually, the second that game ended, I thought, I'm kind of glad they won because, and I hope they win this week. I don't think they will, but I hope they win this week. So if by chance the Patriots are fortunate enough to play in the Super Bowl, I think that they can handle the Falcons.
I would agree.
Guys, Atlanta was up 20-0 in the first half.
Yeah, but the Seahawks, again, we'll get to this. We'll recap this whole game.
Matty Ice melt.
Well, some of that's Pete Carroll's fault, man. They kept leaving points on the board in that first half.
Yeah.
At very worst, it should have been 20-6 at the half, not 20-0.
They're going to really be jacked up for this game.
It could have easily been 20-10. You know, could have, would have, should have. The Falcons got away.
Lights out.
But how was that?
I don't know. Not me.
We should have knocked his lights out.
Is that Pete Carroll?
That's Pete Carroll.
Saying we should have knocked his lights out?
I have him saying a lot of things from the old days, back in the 90s here.
God.
Well, Pete Carroll, it wasn't his finest moment in my view.
No,
we'll break it down. A huge segment on that game.
You know what he thinks of you guys here?
No, that kind of question pisses me off.
There you go. That's what he thinks of you guys, questioning him.
Anything.
Well, no, you were questioning his leaving the points on the board.
Yeah,
well,
he questioned a lot of what he did.
So,
Pete Carroll, not his finest moment in my eyes.
It was one of the highest scoring weekends of divisional playoffs in NFL history. 34.5 points on average.
Wasn't it the highest most?
The highest.
Yep.
Yeah, 34.5, the most points ever in a divisional playoffs game.
Hope you didn't take the under.
And we had a double overtime game. I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
Now, Kevin, I want you to chime in on this one, okay? We all made fun of Donovan McNabb 5-6 years ago.
Not knowing the rules, yep.
Right, a regular season overtime rules.
Yes.
Right.
He thought it was going to keep going.
Yeah.
Now, as you're watching the Denver game,
yep.
I think Denver had the ball with like a couple minutes left in the
first overtime.
Okay. Did you know that there would not be a re-coin toss in between the overtimes? Did you know it would just pick up where it left off?
Yeah, I had to explain that to a couple of the people I was actually watching the game with because they thought not only would there be another coin toss, but they thought there'd be a two-minute warning.
Right.
Which there is in the regular season 15-minute overtime period.
Right.
So I kind of had to explain that. And I think actually what happened was, if I remember correctly, the Ravens had the ball when the first overtime period expired.
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually see Justin Tucker
come out
and practice field goals.
Yeah, we were gonna discuss that because I've never seen that happen.
I have
before.
Never seen that in my life.
But
I think
the way that the NFL, the officials, the refs allowed it to happen was because it was considered, you know, the end of the start of an intermission, to say.
But so that, I will admit, confused me, and I didn't understand why it was allowed, and I had never seen it before. So I was confused on that standpoint. I think you could see, if I'm not mistaken, it was like Champ Bailey kind of looking at him kicking and being like,
yeah,
what is this?
It was
this?
Great. He was like trying to get in his way.
Yeah, it was like, what is this? Like, I'm not having, sometimes a basketball player, like after the whistle, will take a shot and the defense will swat it away
right.
just because
Kevin
it's
Garnett
like a, yeah, it's like a mental
yeah.
thing, right?
Yeah.
So that's what it almost sort of looked like. So I was confused on that, but I will admit that I did know the overtime rules.
How about the other odd thing we saw with the kicker, which was David Akers trying to practice at halftime with a giant, like, dance
band
chorus
or something.
Around.
Yeah, that was funny too.
He's like, get out of my way. I want to practice.
Did I share the story this year of, oh my God, who were we playing? I think it was Indy. And we had a giant, like, and I'm not exaggerating, probably 25-foot tall Pepsi bottle in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they blindfold some poor idiot and he has to chase around the Pepsi bottle and catch it. And if he catches it within like 60 seconds, he like gets like, you know, a year's supply of Pepsi, and the crowd kind of yells at him.
Pepsi bottle moves?
Yeah, the Pepsi bottle moves. Like, they have like these interns like strapped to the Pepsi bottle with ropes, and they like run it around. It's a big inflatable thing.
Yeah.
And so they're doing that, and it was late because they had like some sort of halftime ceremony where Mr. Kraft was out on the field. And so this bottle's moving around, and the kickers come out on the field, and they're trying to kick field goals. And it wasn't Gostkowski. It was the opposing kicker. It can't be the Colts because I would have known, Vinatieri would have had a laugh with him. But the opposing kicker is trying to kick. He takes a practice kick and then careens off the Pepsi bottle.
Oh, that's great.
He was none too happy.
And what do you win if you catch the Pepsi bottle?
So I think you win like a year's worth of Pepsi or something like that. But it's this giant bottle. Yeah, they drag it around, and then they spin you around and blindfold you. And then they just cut you loose. So this poor guy's like stumbling all over the place. And the crowd is, you know, booing when he goes further away and cheering as he gets closer. And it's actually kind of sad to
see,
watch.
See, Bill, this is the insight we get from our buddy Kevin Collins. He's on the field. You can't get this anymore.
It's funny
else.
To watch.
And right. He doesn't say anything about Rob Gronkowski walking around in pain during the divisional game. He talks about a Pepsi can that's running around at halftime during the regular season.
But we also had last year, was it Nick Folk, the old kicker for the Jets?
Yep. Yeah.
He came out too early, and they were doing like one of those retirement, someone going to the Patriots Hall of Fame. I think it was Troy Brown.
Right.
And they had pyrotechnic stuff on the field to kind of shoot off after he did his little speech. And folks running out like 10 seconds before this thing's going to blow.
Oh, no.
And we almost had an unfortunate accident and lost Nick Folk because
really?
He
was
just
it was
gone,
that
up,
close.
Gone up in flames. One of the NFL security guys down on the field. Who's kind of, you know, we inform them and then they inform the Jets or whoever we're playing, hey, don't come out on the field coming out of halftime until this time on the countdown clock.
Right.
Because all these teams now, with, you know, all these new NFL locker rooms, they have the countdown clock right in the locker room.
Of course.
So they're like, okay, you know, there's 6 minutes left, you can go out, or 5 minutes left, you can go out. He kind of came out on his own with just a ball and tee and almost, like, ran right into – I mean, this stuff, guys, is – it's on like 2x4s and they're rockets, like kind of,
right.
You know, bolted to these 2x4s and they all go out and they go boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And, you know, so there's like a runway of these rockets and he ran like, you know, maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet right from these things.
Man.
And then they went off like 10 seconds later.
Is there any video of this?
No, I mean, this is during the half and this is like way off to the side. But I was like, I was running. You know, just not – I hate the Jets. We all know that. But from a human element, I was running down our sideline being like, get that, you know what, out of, you know, trying to warn him, like, you're going to get lit on fire.
That's great.
Could you imagine that headline?
Oh, it would have been awful.
There would have been terrible. A few articles written about that on footballnation.com, Bill.
Firework gate.
Last one I'll tell you was Denver last year, playoff game, first round. They said we have pyro, which I'm sure you saw this past weekend. When we come out of the helmet, you know, there's like these flames and sparks and all that stuff.
Right.
The guys, the company that we had hired to do that, and we had given them a cue and all this stuff, I guess, and they got nervous and, you know, thought they were going to miss out, and they lit the whole thing off, like $10,000 worth of fireworks for just Steven Gostkowski, Danny Aiken, and Zoltan Mesko.
Oh, man.
And Mesko's running through this, like, tunnel of fire, just being like, yeah, like, thinking this is my own personal intro. You know, this is all, because he's kind of a character.
Right.
And he actually came up to me, like, on the sideline after and was like, dude, you didn't have to do that. He's like, that's, and I'm like, and he's, like, giving me a hard time because he knows we screwed it up. And so we had to get, like, you know, that company had to refund us because, you know, when the real team came out, we had nothing.
There was nothing there.
Yeah.
Wow, and that was a playoff game.
Yeah, and I was standing there, and I remember looking at some people that were, you know, from the front office looking at me like, did that just happen? And I was like, yes, it did.
Damn, that's crazy.
But I'm still here, so that's good.
Why, you're responsible for the
No, I'm not responsible. I mean, I guess I'm indirectly in a way, sort of, because I kind of help coordinate the timing of it. Like,
right.
You know when you – that countdown clock is like everyone's Bible on game day,
right.
And you just sort of – kind of make a little one-off sheet that says, okay, at this time the team's on the field for warm-ups, at this time they're off, and this time they're going to be coming out for it. So all the timing was correct. They just sort of ignored the timing and thought, oh my god, we're going to miss it, like the timing must be off, and just went on their own.
That's crazy.
But it was nuts. I mean, $10,000, you imagine that?
Yeah.
Kevin, promise us you aren't going to screw anything up this Sunday.
I'll try not. I think
please.
Hopefully
we
have some surprises in store. We had a flyover for this past game that unfortunately we had to scrap at the last second, which would have been because actually the ceiling was really low. It was like a really foggy, misty day, but
right.
We still could have done it. But it actually the game kind of the way that it unfolded, it didn't kick till like 4:40, 4:41 or something like that.
Yeah, so it was a little
and
darker.
It was too dark and you wouldn't have been able to see anything.
Right.
You would have just heard it.
Right.
So, you know, we had the flight crew and the planes in the air all ready to go, and we had to actually scrap it like 20 minutes beforehand when we knew, you know, you're going to hear it, but nobody's going to see anything.
How much does something like that cost?
I'm not sure.
The Jets are in the air, the helicopters, whatever they were going to be.
Yeah.
And then you say, never mind.
Yeah, for fuel, I mean, this particular crew that we've worked with, they're great. They're the Barnes Air National Guard Base, which is based out of Western Mass. Mm-hmm. So it's not a long flight, but I can imagine, you know, that those things eat fuel like crazy, I'm assuming. So
One of my friends was a pilot. He would do a lot of those flyovers.
Yeah, so I would imagine that that's the biggest cost. Yeah. But the biggest pain in the butt, actually, the biggest hurdle that you have to get through is not necessarily finding a crew to do it, because most guys are more than willing, and, you know, a lot of times they'll land and, you know, they'll make it in the second quarter or something like that, come back for the game. So they love that.
Right.
But the biggest hurdle is just getting the FAA approval, because you have such a major sporting event, and, you know, they want it done. The FAA wants it done, like, at not only a certain time window, but they want them at a certain altitude and a certain speed and all this stuff that's safe. And we've gotten into, you know, before I even got here, I guess, there was an incident, 2009, the home opener. I was actually here as a fan, and they did jets. And I remember I was in the 300 level, which is the top deck. And it felt like your fillings were rattling when these things came over. And I was like, holy smokes, like, those things were low. And when I got the job here, I actually asked about it. And my old boss, Jason, told me that that crew actually got fined and prohibited from doing flyovers because they flew too low.
Wow.
They had approval to go a certain height, and they were well below that, which is why it was so kind of loud. But it made for a really cool moment.
Yeah,
Bill, this guy... What else can this guy do? He's coordinating Apache, you know, helicopter flyovers. He's coordinating the pyrotechnics on the field.
He's going 4-0 in a divisional round.
The guy's amazing.
Yeah.
4-0 in the picks.
It happens. But it's actually fun because it keeps you busy this time of year.
Yeah.
And to put on, you know, when you're trying to put on a preseason game and stuff, it's one thing. But when you're putting on these divisional games and these, you know, how blessed are we here to host back-to-back AFC title games? Like, that just doesn't happen. And the guy I actually work with, that got hired a year after me. So he came here the start of last year, has been here, you know, this is his second full season, and we've gone to two AFC title, or we've hosted two.
That's
crazy. That just doesn't happen, you know?
And, you know, let's get back to these games for a little bit here.
Shoot.
It's amazing because you're playing the Ravens again in the AFC Championship for the second consecutive year. You know, it's great that the Patriots are hosting the AFC Championship back-to-back years, but their opponent's the same. Like, you have to give some credit to the Baltimore Ravens for making it back as well.
Yeah, you got to give them all the credit, especially that game that they played the other day. You know, to give up two special team scores and take those punches to the gut, I mean, I give them all the credit.
Well, let's start off. Let's work in reverse order of the games here. Start off with the Texans and the Patriots. Everyone knows Patriots won 41-28. It was really never a close game. The Patriots, Tom Brady had 344 yards, 3 touchdowns. How about the game for Shane Vereen? 7 rushes, 41 yards, and a touchdown. And then he added 5 catches, 83 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Ridley had a nice game, 82 yards and a touchdown. Welker went over 130, had 131 yards. Hernandez was very active, 6 catches, 85 yards. Brandon Lloyd also scored a touchdown. But when you come after this game, you want Patriots won the game. They send the Texans home. I guess Dan Shaughnessy's article wasn't really that overhyped as we all thought it was last week, because it pretty much was, you know, a Patriots dominant victory.
Even though it was 17-13 at the half, you know? I mean,
never really thought that there was a problem.
You said, the Patriots will come out third quarter and score and, you know, put them away a little bit. I don't know. It sounds crazy, though, right? I mean, it was 17-3, and then in the last minute 15, the Texans put 10 on the board. And most people, if the Texans have a history of winning big games, which they don't, you would think, here come the Texans, you know?
Right.
They're bouncing back. They got the momentum going into halftime. For some reason, I just didn't think that at all.
Yeah,
I don't know why. I just thought, okay, well, you know, they'll get the pep talk at halftime. Brady will come out. They'll orchestrate a drive early third quarter, make it 24-13. Then we'll see if they can come back again. And that's exactly what happened.
I think the drive that won that game, you hit it on the head there, was the first drive of the third quarter when they came out and stretched it to 11 again.
Yeah.
You know, they had sort of lost momentum a little bit. And, you know, Houston goes into the locker room, and they actually ran right by me. And they, you know, all smiles, really into it, probably feeling like, you know, we can do this at 17-13. We just scored 10 straight points.
Right.
And, you know, kind of battled back from 17-3 when you thought, okay, you know, they're cooked. Now, a lot of that was fueled by the big kick returns and all that stuff. But I actually thought that first drive, they came out, and I think they had like a third and four or something like that on their first set of downs the Patriots had, and they converted that. And that, you know, like they, like so many commentators say, when you're in, when you're in a drive, especially when you're an up-tempo offense, the first down is critical. Like once you get that first one, it just sort of, you get that
four,
tempo.
Third and four from the Patriots. 37.
Was it Hernandez that made the
Hernandez
catch?
Hernandez 6-yard catch.
Yeah, and that was huge, right over the middle in traffic, and that really got them moving. And once they put seven on the board coming out of the halftime locker room, I thought, okay, we're all right here.
I forget, a seven-play drive. Was it?
Yeah.
I forget when it was, but Welker had a big third down conversion.
Yeah, and he got smoked.
Held onto the ball.
Remember that?
He got
yeah.
popped.
Yeah.
But you see Josh McDaniels on the sideline, like this awesome fist pump, like, yeah, we converted.
Yep.
Like, it was a really enthusiastic, very intense move. You know, Welker's laying on the ground, probably a little bit banged up, but he really got popped on that play. But he held onto the ball and picked up that first down.
And I happened
you
to
could
be,
tell McDaniels like knew things were going the right way.
And I happened to be near wide receiver coach Chad O'Shea at the time, and he very similar, huge fist pump, you know, double fist pump, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you see a guy of that size take a hit like that and still hold on to it. That's a great play. And it was a third down conversion, which are his specialties generally.
Right. Eight catches in the game for Welker, so another good game. And how about Tom Brady? He passed Joe Montana for most postseason wins in NFL history. He now has 17. If the Pats beat the Ravens this weekend, Brady will have 6 Super Bowl appearances. He'll pass John Elway, who currently has 5 playoff appearances.
Everyone sucks but me.
That's right, Tom. Everyone sucks but you. Most wins by a playoff, Tom Brady is 17-6. Joe Montana is 16-7. Terry Bradshaw is 14-5.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. And then if Brady wins the Super Bowl, he'll tie Terry Bradshaw and Joe Montana for most Super Bowl wins by a quarterback. Pretty impressive.
Hey, if you're a Patriots fan and you're looking at the 4 quarterbacks that remain, you got to like your chances here. I know Vegas agrees.
Matt Ryan, Colin Kaepernick, Joe
unproven,
Flacco, and Tom Brady.
Unproven. Flacco, well, hey, Flacco's probably the, you know, honestly,
second,
Flacco's probably
second most proven.
Yeah, he just has to get over the hump, and he can't.
But the last two games, guys, you know, the AFC title game last year and the game this year in Baltimore, he's played very well against the Patriots.
And that AFC title game was not his fault last year.
No, it was not.
Drop pass.
He put the ball where it needed to be and just didn't happen.
Drop pass, missed, you know, shanked field goal. So
I give him a lot of credit. I think he, you know, especially, and I'm maybe ignoring a lot of what he's done against other teams, but against us and in big games, which both of those games were, he showed up to play.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're going to win a title, a lot of teams recently, they've been equal parts lucky and good. Would you agree? Like the Steelers had that one crazy one run a couple years ago. The Giants have had a couple runs where they've been both good and also a little bit lucky, right? That's how I felt kind of with the Ravens when I watched that game on Saturday, man. I mean, they played well, but they got a little bit of luck. And we'll break that down in some detail here later in the show, but I think you have to have both parts, unless you're just a dominating force like the Patriots were a couple years ago. Weren't able to get it done in the Super Bowl, you know what I mean? So I think they've got both things going their way.
I agree, totally agree.
I mean, I don't know if I'm a huge karma guy, but is there something to the Ray Lewis karma thing right now?
It might be.
You never know.
Certainly might be. Now, if there's one negative thing about this game or one bad thing to take away, it is the Rob Gronkowski injury. You probably know by now he broke his forearm. It's apparently a different part of the bone that he broke. How many bones are in your forearm? Are there a lot of them in there?
I don't know.
I'm like touching my forearm right now, counting how many bones I got in there. Anyway, broke his forearm. It will, you know, miss the remainder of the year.
You know what though, Bill? They've been getting it done all year without.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Does the Gronk injury affect the Patriots at all?
Yes.
How?
Because he's the best tight end in the game.
But they're still dominating.
Well, does it affect them? Yes. Can they still get by without him? Sure. Because they have, you know, Hernandez is one of the top 3 or 4 tight ends in the game.
They're doing a little bit more than get by, Todd. They scored 41 points on Saturday.
Yeah, so they're fine. They're okay. Yeah, it would be great to have Gronk. But again, it's not like he was healthy all year and now he's gone. I mean, they've been dealing with him being injured most of the season, so they're just back to that again.
You got to figure the game plan was, you know, focused around having a lot of plays for Rob Gronkowski, and then the first quarter comes around and they have to totally change everything.
Not only that, Bill, Brady came out and said that in the post-game press conference and said that this game specifically was going to be a Gronk and Woodhead game. And
sure it was.
And both of them were right, taken away, Woodhead. Which makes those 41 points even more impressive because they had to adjust on the fly.
Now, Woodhead injury is, from what I understand, he needs to pass one more test before he's cleared to play. Is that correct, Kevin?
That's what it seems like. And Bill hinted.
That's the latest thing I read.
Yeah, Bill hinted that he was cleared to come back in the game on Sunday if need be. But Vereen played so well, and I think they just kind of realized, like, let's not make another mistake rushing a guy back here.
It's amazing. Vereen's game to me is amazing because, you know, he had a pretty good year that. Game against the Jets on, what was it, Thanksgiving? That's really the one that comes to mind, his best game of the year. He had that huge reception run for a touchdown. But it's amazing that this guy, you know, really played behind Ridley and Woodhead and even Brandon Bolden for a little bit, and yet he comes out against the Texans and has, you know, a career day.
And that catch he made was a 33-yard catch down the left-hand side that was kind of the over-the-shoulder catch where he got both feet in.
Mm-hmm.
You know the one I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's like a wide receiver caliber, you know, type difficult catch.
Yeah.
And for a running back, I think a lot of people don't give him enough credit for that type of play because that's a running back going out there on a wheel route. And they're not all that used to making that type of catch, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that happened, I had a pretty good view of it. And I thought when the ball was in the air, the coverage wasn't all that terrible. And I thought, oh, he's got no chance at this. And I was shocked that he brought it in.
On the Texans side of things, Matt Schaub had a decent day, 343 yards, two touchdowns.
Garbage time.
Yeah. How about Arian Foster, though? 22 carries, 90 yards and a touchdown, seven catches, 63 yards and a touchdown. And I read a report that Mr. Kraft waited outside the Texans' bus to just shake Arian Foster's hand. Kevin, any truth to that?
I didn't see it. First I've heard of it, but I'm kind of out of the loop a little bit today.
That's good. Love hearing that on air.
Why are you out of the loop? You
no,
busy,
I just
orchestrating pyrotechnics for
yeah, just trying to get stuff done for this weekend.
Get a flyover ready.
No, and I guess I can say this. I guess it doesn't really matter because it's common knowledge. But the four teams that advanced to this type or to this level of the season. So there's four teams left. The day after the divisional round ends. So yesterday. A good chunk of our staff here flew to New Orleans because the NFL has meetings for all of us. And you kind of have to plan like you're going even though you may not be going,
right.
Which is uncomfortable. And we were talking about on the last show because you don't want to count your chickens before they hatch and all that crap. But it just – it's sort of – you know, it kicks in for real as of yesterday because – and it makes it even more painful if you don't end up going because you're doing all this added work and putting all this planning into it
and
for no reason.
For nothing.
Exactly. So the offices are quite busy here at Gillette Stadium, but the one good thing is we all have experience doing this last year, so hopefully we can all be more efficient this year from what we learned last year.
And don't look at the negative side of it, of not being able to go. Look at the great part. Like, you're planning to go to the Super Bowl and just...
Yeah. So whatever happens, happens, but all four teams will be prepared for no matter what.
All right. Very good to know.
Kevin, think about the years back in the day when they had only 1 week between divisional AFC Championship.
Yeah, and they actually had that, the first Super Bowl the Patriots won, which was the 2001 season. The game was played in February of 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And because of 9/11 and, they didn't play for, it was at least 1 week, if not two. I think it was 1 week, right? I believe
I think so.
Week after 9/11 they didn't play, and then they got back into it. And because of that kind of week off, they only had the 1 week.
Right.
And people here, there were very few of them still left from that time, but there are some. And they talk about it often, about how crazy it was, because the team actually flew to Pittsburgh and played the game, and then most of the staff just kept going on the plane to New Orleans.
Wow.
They never even came home. They had to pack like they were going to be gone for 2 weeks when they left that Saturday, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of that. I can't imagine. That must have been so crazy. Everything crammed into a very short amount of time. Within 7 days, you are, thinking as a fan and maybe some of the staff, if you recall, Pittsburgh was very confident going into that game.
Yep.
They're already kind of planning their trip, and our staff and you know, I won't say our players, but I'm sure that it was in their mind that, you know, we could be coming home after this, and all of a sudden to win that game and not even have to come home and go straight to New Orleans must have been a whirlwind, which is even more a testament to Belichick and the coaching staff to have to go through that logistical-type nightmare and still get that team ready to play and win.
Hmm. All right, what do you say we take a short break? When we return, we'll recap the rest of the action from the divisional playoffs. If you want to talk about the Patriots win, give us a call, 508-298-0398. More Football Nation coming up next on Patriots.com Radio.
Todd DeVries and Bill Enright bring you the latest trends from the NFL on Football Nation.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but, like, basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of the smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
Snap to Brady. Steps up, shoots it long and deep down the left side, and it is caught! Spectacular catch for a touchdown by Shane Vereen. Just beautiful.
Shane Vereen. Can't say enough good things about him, Todd. I know you were a big fan of him when he was coming out of college, right?
California.
Love those California running backs, yeah. You know what? Think about the California running backs that have come out the last couple of years. They always seem to have a knack for catching passes out of the backfield.
Marshawn Lynch, Jahvid Best, yeah. Shane Vereen. Who am I forgetting? Justin Forsett.
Yeah. All pretty dynamic when it comes
to
receiving.
Go back to J.J. Arrington. Remember him?
Sure.
He's got a bust with the Cardinals. But, yeah, they produce them. Hey, you know, they produce some decent wide receivers as well. Deshaun Jackson comes to mind. So Aaron Rodgers, quarterback. Kyle's produced some skill position talent, no doubt about it.
All right, what do you say? Let's go into this Falcons-Seahawks game. It was really it was an incredible game. Falcons led 20-0 at halftime. Seahawks scored and led 28-27 with 30 seconds left. Atlanta hits a field goal with 8 seconds left to win the game. But even at that point, they screwed up the squib kick or onside kick. And for a second there, you thought, well, you know what? The Seahawks, they have a chance of going down the field with only 8 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah, you know, they threw like a 9 or 10 yard pass, which was giving up. I was disappointed in that, you know? They needed to get to that like 35, 37 yard line, and they didn't make an attempt to, you know what I mean?
Right.
I didn't understand that play call, but, you know, what are you going to do? You got 8 seconds. They had timeouts available too. So, I was just hoping they would throw a 15 or 20 yarder and then try for the field goal. Man, I mean, Atlanta, for a team that's trying to win a freaking playoff game, they sure made it very difficult on themselves, let me tell you. They get up to the 20-0 lead, right?
Right.
They get help.
Their fans are pumped.
Fans are pumped. They're looking good. They're able to run the ball, which was a surprise. Everyone thought Seattle had one of the top rushing games in the NFL, and Atlanta's rush defense is one of the worst of the playoff teams, right?
Right, yeah.
Everyone thought Marshawn and Turbin and Russell Wilson would run all over him, and it was the other way around early on. Jacquizz Rodgers with one of the great runs of the playoffs so far. He just bulldozed. Who was it, Earl Thomas?
Yes, it was Earl Thomas.
Crushed him, kept going. That set the tone, so to speak, if you like that cliche. And, you know, Burner Turner had a nice game. He had one of his better games of late. Matt Ryan was connecting with Roddy White. Roddy White and Sherman. Remember last week, Bill, we were talking about Sherman, the defensive back for Seattle, and how he was talking so much smack. And I was a little disappointed because the Falcons didn't have an equally smack-talking wide receiver diva to kind of counterbalance it. And you said, hey, man, Roddy White can talk a little bit too.
Yeah.
Well, you were right, because after he caught that touchdown pass, how about
that? Got right in his face.
Yeah, and Sherman's just clapping his hands like a
clapped
golf clap.
Yeah. Well,
and right
pop,
then and
I
there.
Saw
that. But that was good. It's juice. It was juice for the game. Roddy White looked good there. But then, you know what? Then the Falcons just kind of sat on the lead. They really did.
They weren't calling a lot of pass plays. Their defenses were starting to let up a lot of yards. A lot of first down, a lot of third down conversions. Yeah.
They got conservative, and they let Seattle get in the game. Seattle, now, let's be honest. Of all the teams rolling into the playoffs, Seattle probably had as much mojo as anybody. Right.
Right. A lot of swagger.
And now they gave him hope. You know, they got him back into the game a little bit. They scored a touchdown to make it 27-14. And And then you just started feeling it. Then there was like a three and out, and they're jumping around. Even though they're down a couple touchdowns, you're like, uh-oh. And then Matt Ryan threw just a god-awful interception that kind of reminded us of why Matt Ryan hasn't won a playoff game yet. That thing that lollipop he threw, was it the beginning of the fourth quarter? Terrible. Yeah, it's Earl Thomas again, right?
Yeah, it was bad.
Really bad.
And it was unforced. I think it was first down when he threw it.
Yes, it was. It was very strange. So they were playing conservative, and then they try to go, you know, for the jugular, and it just backfires on them. I didn't know what Atlanta was trying to do. They just seemed like they lost their way. And again, you know, Seattle left points on the board. Bill, we've got to talk about earlier in the game. They have the third and one from about the 10-yard line, I think it was.
And
they elect to run it with Robert Turbin on third and one instead of the beast mode, right?
That was just like...
And on that play, I guess to his credit, even though it didn't work, Pete Carroll was trying to call a timeout. He didn't get the timeout called in time. You saw him running down the sideline. He was actually on the field trying to stop the play before it happened on the third and one. Well, Robert Turbin gets stuffed. So then what do? Then they bring in Marshawn Lynch, right? And you're like, oh, here we go. And they hand it off to Michael Robinson, the fullback. They didn't give it to you don't give it to your best player two plays in a row on third and one and fourth and one.
Play that Pete Carroll clip now, Kevin.
But you know why he ran Turbin?
Why?
He's the smallest of the guys. You know, he looks smaller than the other guys, but he plays very strong.
There you go.
Is that the reason?
That's what Pete says.
Bill, like, that
these
was...
guys are kind of the modern-day swashbucklers.
Well, listen, that is definitely one of the biggest coaching blunders of this weekend. And we're going to give out an award at the end of the show. So keep all these in mind. Pete Carroll gives the ball to Robert Turbin, then the fullback, Michael Robinson, on third and fourth and one instead of Marshawn Lynch. That's definitely one of them.
Now, Bill, that was... Let's give the time check here. That was second quarter. I'm looking at the play-by-play chart here. That was the second quarter...
Inside the 20.
With under six minutes left in the half, 13-0. They're down 13-0. A field goal's fine. Get on the board. You know? Get on the board. Or give it to your best player if you're going to go for it. They didn't either.
They were in the red zone, right?
At the 11-yard line.
Yeah, 11-yard line.
Right. All right. And you know how there's the old theory. If you're on the road, just get the points on the board. And get you
of
know.
Course.
Yeah. They didn't do it. So instead of 13-3, or maybe even 13-7, if they give it to Lynch and they were able to drive it on in, it's 13-0. Mm-hmm. Then Atlanta gets the ball, and in four plays, they go 88 yards with the bomb to Roddy White to end it. So quickly, a quick strike. Really, it was a one-minute drive for the Falcons. So now it's 20-0. But undaunted, the Seahawks come right back, and they have another drive where they get all the way down to the 11-yard line again, and then without any timeouts left, Russell Wilson gets sacked on third down. They can't get another playoff, and that's that. Brutal. Brutal.
Yeah, it was – you just have – those are head-scratchers. Those are head-scratchers.
Now,
Why do you do that?
The third and 11 from the 11 to end the half, you know, that's partly on Russell Wilson as well. You know,
you can't take a sack there.
Can't take a sack, but the pressure was insane. It wasn't like he was sitting back in the pocket, you know, surveying the field.
Get rid of it. You can get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah. So part of that is on Russell Wilson, or maybe on the play calling for not maybe rolling him out of the pocket or something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's a good point, because I remember that Seattle game. The Patriots had the ball right before the half with like 7 seconds left, and Brady tried to get rid of it, but was in the pocket and threw it out the back of the end zone and got called for grounding, and they ran the clock out.
Yep.
Because that was a 10-second runoff. So that's another thing that he probably had in his mind.
So it goes to halftime, 20-0, Bill. And again,
instead of what?
Ifs, you know, ifs, woulda, coulda, shoulda. 20-6 at a minimum, right?
Minimum.
20
Just
to six.
Think they took the field goals, right?
Yeah.
Or it could have been 20-14. They were inside the 15-yard line.
Yeah. That's, you know, whatever the case may be, it was 20-0. And, you know, the Seahawks come right out of halftime, score a touchdown right away. Boom. 5-minute drive, 20-7. Falcons answer. The Falcons answer with a touchdown, Kevin. Oh, he's gonna play it again. There you go. You can play that soundbite for any bird team, right?
You really like that one, Todd. I think it's one of your favorites.
Yeah, Todd likes
I love
that
it
one.
Because you play for every team with the bird.
He has that little
Falcons,
that
Seahawks,
giddy little,
Cardinals.
He has that giddy little giggle whenever I play. I like
it. Yeah, I think
they all get the
great.
Same sound effect. Yeah.
It's a, you know, did we talk about changing it up the bird depending on the team at one point?
Ravens, yeah, it's an off-season project.
Yeah.
You know,
Kevin,
for Seattle.
Kevin didn't have time to do that. Todd, he was making his rejoin.
Too busy making gold opens.
Well, we're going to do, like, that bird thing over, like, a grunge, like, guitar lick.
The foghorn.
Oh, the foghorn, you know, or play it over, like, Nirvana or Pearl Jam or something for a second. Oh, something like that.
We'll get into that.
Yeah, you'll work on that. You know.
It's an off-season project. We'll have it next year.
All right. Good. So anyway, it's 27-7. That's when they got conservative, and then all hell broke loose in that fourth quarter. And by the way, Russell Wilson, I mean, I don't know. Did they do the voting yet for Rookie of the Year?
I don't know, but he deserves it.
He definitely does at this point.
385 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he also ran the ball 7 times for 60 yards and another score.
He's been incredible. Remarkable. He's been remarkable. And he led them back, and they scored that touchdown. Now here's, so let's just fast forward. They score the touchdown with Marshawn Lynch with 30-some-odd seconds left, right?
Right.
He fumbles it as he's going into the end zone, and the offensive lineman picks it up from Seattle. So they're going to have the ball no matter what. The question is if he has crossed the plane or not. If he crossed the plane, it's a touchdown, obviously, and that's what wound up happening. But if he hadn't, it would have been a forward fumble, which means they would have had to bring the ball back to the spot of the fumble and play the next down.
Right.
In hindsight, and of course, this is just hindsight, but this is what we do. We speculate, right?
Of course.
In hindsight, they scored that touchdown with, 31 seconds left? Mm-hmm. If they had had to have run another play from the one-inch line or whatever, if he had fumbled it before he went in, right? They'd probably run in, you know, more time off the clock, obviously, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd probably punch it in from the one-inch line, you'd think.
Right.
That would have given Seattle less time. Atlanta.
Less time,
31 seconds, which was just enough time to do what they needed to do. So it's amazing how these games just come down to literally a matter of inches, but just craziness. So they score the touchdown. Then Matt Ryan gets the ball. And Bill, you and I talked about this earlier in the season when we
now
were
they're
kinda...
up. They're up. The Seahawks are winning 28-27.
Yeah,
the first lead of the game. Yep, 30 seconds left on the clock.
Right. Atlanta has the ball now at their own 28 and 31 seconds. And, you know, unlike Denver, which we'll talk about later here, next game or whatever, in our recaps, who has a similar amount of time from a similar spot on the field and decided to kneel on the ball. Of course, the Falcons couldn't kneel on the ball, but they proved what you can do in a short amount of time.
Yep.
Right? 22 yards to Harry Douglas, 19 yards to Tony Gonzalez, and then you kick the field goal. Now, I don't know why they kicked the field goal when they could have run all the time off the clock and then kicked the field goal or tried to get closer.
Yeah.
Explain me that. I don't understand that.
In the way that Smith was running down the sideline like a maniac trying to get the timeout when there was still 13 seconds on the clock.
I didn't understand.
I didn't either.
You do two things, right?
I'll tell you what, you don't see Belichick doing that.
No. Belichick doesn't run anywhere.
No.
But you either run another play, right, Kev, to get a few more yards, center the ball.
Yeah.
Or if you want to kick
just
the field goal,
make sure it's the last play of the game.
Yeah, then you just run it down to 2 seconds and call your timeout.
I agree.
They didn't either. It was like, what are you doing? What are these coaches doing in this game? So, you know, they make the field goal. Well, first of all, they missed the field goal, correct, Bill?
See, that's the thing about icing the kicker. There's no need to do it because idiot Pete Carroll's on the sidelines and he's pretending not to call timeout, even though the camera showed him calling a timeout. Matt Bryant gets the snap, kicks the field goal, misses it. But the refs blow the play dead because Pete Carroll tried to ice him. So what does Matt Bryant do? He says, oh, you want to try to ice me? I missed that one. I gave you a free shot. Here's the second one. Bangs it through the uprights. 49-yarder. Falcons go up 31-28.
I love how Pete Carroll pretended like he didn't call the timeout.
And that's the next coaching blunder that we have of this weekend. That's why I think right now Pete Carroll is definitely in the lead for the coaching shenanigans for this weekend. Why would you pretend that you didn't call timeout? He was like adamantly pissed off that he was trying to tell the refs, I didn't call timeout. Going up and down the sidelines, throwing things, you know, taking off his headphones, screaming at the refs. You know, these poor referees were like, Pete, like, why are you trying to BS us right now? The entire world saw you call the timeout. I heard you call the timeout. And now you're trying to pretend like you didn't just because
the field goal. There was one report after the game that he said that he wasn't complaining about that. That he said he was complaining about that.
The fact he got to kick it?
He got to kick it. Well, that's what happens when you ice a kicker, dude.
Yeah.
He gets to kick it.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
No sense. Made no sense. So the second one goes through, Bill, right? And the craziness isn't over yet. because there's 8 seconds left in this crazy game.
Yeah.
Actually, there's more time than that left when they actually made the field goal, right?
13 seconds left.
Yeah. So then you're like, okay, they don't want to kick it to Washington, right? You know that. You don't want to kick it deep because obviously the guy's returned, what, 8 kicks for touchdowns in his career?
Yeah.
So you know they're going to squib it. But they do an onside kick.
Now, is that a coaching error or did Matt Bryant screw up?
I think the kicker had to have screwed that up.
Because otherwise we're giving Mike Smith another coaching blunder on this one. Messed up with kicking the field goal with 13 seconds left instead of letting the timeout go, you know, instead of letting the clock run a little bit and then call timeout. And if he says kick an onside, I mean, he may surpass Carroll.
I think it was just a squib gone bad, you know, and unfortunately it went right to a player.
Squib gone bad.
There you go. There you go. Squibgonebad.com. That'll be our new website, Bill.
Yeah.
So, you know, it goes right to a player, a Seattle player, jumps right on it. So it basically wastes like no time. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a ball bouncing around, you know, any of that. Once somebody happened to return it, nothing. So they have 8 seconds, but, you know, they weren't able to get it done. Like I said earlier, they threw like a quick out pass for what, I think 6 yards actually.
Yep.
And they had no chance for the kick, and they threw the Hail Mary that was intercepted by
Julio Jones.
Who, by the way, Bill, I had Julio Jones in a fantasy league.
Did you get any points for that?
I don't know. I have to check. You know what's funny? It's my 8-year-old son. That's the first thing he said.
Reception?
But it was,
if I was your wife, I'd kill you.
My 8-year-old son's watching, because I'm watching the game with him. He's like, well, Dad, who do you have in fantasy? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, Julio Jones. So when he intercepted it, he goes, why is Julio playing defense? And I'm like, well, son, you know, on Hail Marys, they do this. Yeah. He goes, oh, you got points for that, huh? And I was like, I don't know.
Nah.
Do I?
No, nah, definitely not.
I don't think so.
Because you're not in an IDP league.
I know. But anyway.
But, you know, if you had to be watching that game to get a real feel for the last, I don't know, 4 minutes of it, the Seahawks go up, then the Falcons drive down the field, and then the whole incident with the squib gone bad. It was heart pounding, and I don't care if the Falcons won. I don't care if the Seahawks were going to win. It didn't bother me. But as an NFL fan, that was one of the best games of the year, I think.
Yeah, and we're doing this in reverse order, Bill. But this was the third game of four, and the first two games, which we're going to recap here in a second, I mean, they were equally tremendous, I thought.
Before we get to the Broncos and Ravens and the 49ers and Packers, how about Tony Gonzalez gets his first postseason win of his career?
Yeah, he was pretty emotional afterwards.
Very emotional, yeah.
And hey, you know, the guy's class act, and how about the touchdown when he scored early? He gets both feet in just by an inch.
Incredible athlete.
He always knows where he is on the field. Just unbelievable. And Matt Ryan gets the monkey off his back, so to speak, at least temporarily. You know, now they got to take the next step, right?
Right. So the Falcons will play the NFC Championship game in Atlanta against the San Francisco 49ers because San Fran – beat Green Bay 45-31. Now, Todd, halftime, this was a close game. I think it was 24-21, but the 49ers just blew them out of the water in the second half. In fact, I think they, what did they score? The 49ers were winning 24-21 at the end of the first half. San Fran outscored Green Bay 21-10 in the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable. The Kaepernick show. I mean, this guy is his coming out party. We've kind of wondered about whether or not Harbaugh made the right move going to Kaepernick. And, you know, we said, hey, Kaepernick's going to give you the big play, but is he going to make too many mistakes to counteract it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, would it be better off going with Alex Smith, a more conservative approach, lean on your defense, lean on your running game? And in this game, he looks like a genius, Coach Harbaugh does, because Kaepernick was just crazy good. And like you said, Bill, you know, when it was 24-24 mid-third, Kaepernick has the 56-yard run on the read option, and they go on and score two more touchdowns right after that. It's blink of an eye, Bill. It's 45-24. It's over. And, you know, the Packers score a trash touchdown there at the end to pad the stats a little bit. But how about Colin Kaepernick, Bill? I mean, did you see this coming?
I'd be lying if I said that he was I saw him breaking the NFL quarterback rushing record for 181 yards and 2 touchdowns, and I would be lying if I said that the 49ers would break their franchise record with 579 total yards You know, Joe Montana, Steve Young, Kaepernick had a better postseason game than any of those guys. Did I see that coming? Absolutely not. I would be lying if I said that. But we knew that Kaepernick can make plays. We knew that the Green Bay Packers defense sucked. We knew that Adrian Peterson rushed for, what was it, 414 yards against this Packers team in the two regular season games. So, you know, we knew the Packers couldn't stop the run, and Kaepernick loves to run. So I saw him having a good game, but not anywhere near the level of what he produced.
Well, hey, you know, most of us missed it because of the overtime ending of the Broncos-Ravens game, but we missed the pick six that he threw to start the game.
Isn't that amazing? That's how he starts out the game, with a pick six, and he comes out and finishes with those kind of stats?
Pick six, but 3 minutes later, he, you know, makes amends with a 20-yard run for a touchdown. So it's 7-7, and there's still 9 minutes left in the first. So I think that was a huge confidence boost for him, you know, to come back that quickly from the huge mistake. And that was a terrible throw, the pick six. I mean, he was in the pocket way too long. Usually, for him, or a running quarterback, you just take off, right?
Right.
For some reason, he looked, threw it across the field, just a big no-no, and the rest is history. But, yeah, he rebounded quickly. And the rest of the game, Bill, I mean, he throws a laser.
Yeah, he's got that ball on a string.
Now, I interviewed him 4 years ago, Bill. He was actually a bigger baseball prospect coming out of high school than he was football.
Okay.
He had five baseball scholarships to major schools, and he only had one football scholarship. So the guy throws a 94-mile-per-hour fastball. He showed it in this game. I mean, he was slinging it. So much so, did you notice all the drops that the Niners had?
Yeah, it was all the hands. It wasn't bad passes.
They can't catch them. Right. A lot of these guys can't catch it because he throws it a little too hard. He doesn't have any touch yet. He hasn't developed any touch. He just zings it no matter how far away you are. You're 8 yards away. You're 58 yards away. He's going to throw at the same velocity. But one guy that's been catching everything is Michael Crabtree. This guy has emerged this year ever since Kaepernick took over.
Loves him.
Nine catches, 119 yards, pair of touchdowns, swagger. I mean, he's finally come into his own as, you know, when he was a top 10 pick from the Niners out of Texas Tech a few years ago. I mean, he was pretty much a bust the first couple of years, Bill. Now he looks like the man.
Well, the thing is, how many of those Kaepernick haters out there were saying, oh, Alex Smith should be in the game after that first pick six? And then how quickly did they say, you know what, this kid's actually pretty legit, after they see him passing for 263 yards, two touchdowns, and rushing for 181 yards and another two scores?
He was unbelievable. Now, you know, the defense was sketchy. You know, the Green Bay pass, the Green Bay defense all around was just all over the place. They didn't know what was going on. It was funny. Did you read the quotes before the game, Bill? Some of the Packers defenders talking about how, well, we were lucky we got to prepare for Kaepernick with Joe Webb in the last minute.
Yeah, not Joe even Webb. On the same level.
Not even close. Not even close. So I thought that was pretty interesting. You know, they didn't know what they were doing, trying to hold the edge, trying to contain that edge when he keeps it on the read option. They didn't control the edge. They just gave it to him every time.
Now
he took it.
You think about the 49ers offense, and they have Colin Kaepernick, Frank Gore, and Michael Crabtree. And that's really it. I mean, Kaepernick had 263 yards. Frank Gore and Michael Crabtree accounted for like 60% of those yards. Vernon Davis, MIA. Ted Ginn Jr., like, is that really your number two wide receiver at this point?
But look at
this.
Randy
Moss didn't do a whole lot.
Yeah, look at the receptions to prove your point. Crabtree, 9 catches, okay?
Yeah.
Here are the next 6 guys. Number of receptions: Gore, 2. Davis, 1. Moss, 2. Walker, 1. James, 1. Ginn, 1. That's it.
Right. That's it. So, you know, shut down Michael Crabtree, and then you just have to worry about Colin Kaepernick running all over you.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if the Falcons can do that this week.
How about the Packers? What did you think of Aaron Rodgers' performance? 257 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. That 49ers defense, they're tough, man. And that Packers offense, they just didn't do their jobs.
If you really think about it, Bill, okay, what's being overlooked here is that 49ers defense.
Yeah, they did.
If you look at the stats, you look at the box score, 31 points, you're like, yeah, that's not that impressive. But you got to remember, one was a pick six,
right?
One touchdown. And the other touchdown was with 57 seconds left when the game was over and they're already celebrating. And half the people were out of the stadium drinking out in the parking lot. So,
sure.
You know, they really kind of only gave up 17 points. And, the first half, you know, they gave up some yards and points. Second half, man, they just stiffened up. And they looked good. They looked good. I mean, safe to say they have the best defense left, right?
By far. By far.
Don't you think?
Without a doubt.
When they're playing, when they're playing like they can, they've got the best personnel on the defensive side of the ball.
You know, I'm a huge Patrick Willis fan, and he just, you know, that defense they have is ferocious.
Here's the thing. You mentioned Aaron Rodgers. And again, this is playing the what-if game, what-if game.
But that's what we do. That's why we love this job.
But here's the deal. All right. Aaron Rodgers, right now, I believe... what is his record in the playoffs? I thought I had this written down.
Well, he was 4-0 when he won the Super Bowl. He lost his first game last year, and he lost his first game 1-1 this year. So that would be 5-2, if I'm correct.
Right.
If my math is correct.
I think he's lost three, though.
You know I'm horrible at math.
Well, here's the deal.
Yes, he did lose three. Kurt Warner, remember that huge game a couple years ago? So that was the third one. Yeah, good call.
All right, so his playoff record is 5-3.
Yeah.
One win was this year.
Right.
All of his other wins were the year they won the Super Bowl. They went 4-0 as a wild card.
Right.
In the first game of that playoff run, they played in Philadelphia.
Right.
Mike Vick had led the team down. They're losing 21-16. Vick has Jeremy Maclin wide open at the 8-yard line. Mm-hmm. He would have caught it. They would have had first and goal with 28 seconds left. Instead, he tries to throw a Hail Mary, basically, to Riley Cooper for no reason from the thing. It's like a 30-yard line.
Yeah.
Intercept it.
Right.
If Vic, this is again, if, woulda, coulda, shoulda, whatever, if he plays it smart there, throws it to Maclin, maybe they punch it in with LeSean McCoy, whatever, you know, guess what Aaron Rodgers' record would be in the playoffs right now? It'd be
take away those four wins, yeah.
1-4 would be his playoff. You'd be talking about him in the same breath as Matt Ryan right now. No, of course, it didn't happen.
Right.
But again, one play here, one play there, 1 yard here, 1 yard there, 1 inch there, 1 foot out of bounds, 1 foot in bounds. So many examples of this. You know, you look at the Tyree catch for the Giants, the Manningham catch last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many examples. It's just amazing how the fortunes of a franchise or the status of a quarterback, legend or GOAT, can happen on one play that they have nothing to do with.
The ball has to bounce your way. And you said at the top of the show, sometimes you always have to be good, but sometimes you have to be lucky too.
Yep.
That's what it is. I mean, you know.
Hey, Kevin. Is Kevin out there?
I'm here.
Classic example, Patriots, tuck rule.
Yeah.
What would have happened, and this is, a ridiculous question, but this is radio. We ask ridiculous questions.
Okay.
Let's say the tuck rule goes the other way. What happens that year and in the years following?
Oh, they definitely don't win that year. The game's over.
Yep.
Yeah.
Was it Craig Biekert who came up with the ball? Biekert?
I think so.
54 in white,
yeah.
I think.
Maybe. What'd you say? He's white, I think?
No, I said 54 in white.
Raiders.
Oh. They had white uniforms and the white snow, and they kind of blend in.
Oh, that's great.
it would have been more funny if I said the other way. But anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, they definitely don't win that year. I'd like to think that maybe they make the playoffs. I mean, they didn't make the playoffs the next year, and a lot of people thought that was a letdown. I think they went 9-7. I'd like to think maybe they could have made the playoffs next year, but I definitely think you can make the argument. If that rule doesn't happen, they might have two trophies, maybe one, or they could have none. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen.
Well, let me ask you this as a Patriots fan, all right? That's probably the best example of a break kind of going your way, whether it's right or wrong, whatever. What's the one that went the other way?
There was one, I think, that happened well before I was born. They were playing – you guys might have heard about this. I don't know. Bill's definitely in my age group. Todd, maybe you heard about this. Maybe – you were probably a kid. I think it was in the 70s when they played Oakland. And there was some kind of like personal foul penalty called on us that was just absolutely ludicrous. And a lot of people, when I was growing up, would harken back to that call. I'm not sure.
Well, how about in the Brady era? Like,
in the Brady era?
What do you think, the Manningham catch? I mean, not a like a bad call, or it could be a bad call.
Just a tough break, yeah.
Or just like, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, basically evidence of kind of like destiny working against you in a way.
Right.
I'd say Tyree's catch against his head.
A lot
of people point at that.
Yeah, more so than the Manningham catch in my mind.
The Manningham catch was a great play, and, you know,
just
obviously
a great play.
Yeah, the Tyree catch was an equally as great play, but, you know, for that ball to stay lodged in there with Rodney Harrison draped all over him against his head was just kind of a crazy play.
How about Eli even getting that one off?
Yeah, so, right. I mean, Seymour and company had a chance to bring him down. I mean, that whole play, not just the catch, was just one of those you tip your hat to the other team and, you know, some greater power was probably at work there.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, that's what I that's a good, that's the one that really stands out to me in this modern, let's say, last like 12 year era. But they've gotten lucky for sure, probably more times than they've been unlucky.
So the question will be, Bill, as we transition to the next and final game here.
Yeah.
Will the play of Denver safety Raheem Moore be that miracle play
this year's Tyree?
Will it be the play, the destiny play for the Ravens, or will the Patriots just extinguish them this week? And we'll talk all about that on our Thursday show. We'll break down that game completely. But you know what? That's the kind of play we're talking about here.
Yeah, when I watched that play, but also the Lynch fumble that landed in the lineman's hands.
Yeah.
When I watched that, I sort of thought, okay, that's, you know, I kind of put a little asterisk next to it and said, okay, this is one of those destiny plays, you know. And I said, I don't want to face this team again. And so I was kind of glad they lost.
Yeah, I mean, they're a scary team.
Because when you see teams get those kind of breaks, other teams, you're like, oh, I wonder if there's just some greater puzzle.
Well, do you feel that way at all with the Ravens?
I don't. I got to be honest with you.
Okay.
I know we're going to hold off on predictions for Thursday, but I have a gut feeling that I developed not even – you know, having watched us play on Sunday, but after watching Baltimore win, and we'll talk about that more on Thursday.
Okay. Well, I'll just say this. The last 5 minutes here talking about just plays that define a championship run. Lucky. Yeah. I think that if Baltimore winds up, you know, upsetting the Patriots and winning a Super Bowl, you're going to point at that play, the 70-yard bomb. They had no business completing, and Raheem Moore just losing it in the whatever, the snow, the lights, the sun. Bill, do you want to go into this game right now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens beat the Denver Broncos 38-35. It was double overtime. I'm not sure if that ever happened in my lifetime during the postseason. We saw a double overtime game. Ravens went on the road. Broncos were the top-seeded team in the AFC, had the bye. They were winning with 30 seconds left in the game. And this play that we're talking about, Joe Flacco connects with Jacoby Jones on a 70-yard touchdown pass, 31 seconds left. And Raheem Moore, the cornerback of the safety, the defensive back for the Denver Broncos, may have had the worst play on a ball I've ever seen. Was 2 yards short.
Bill, it was so bad that when you're watching it live, I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is way underthrown by Flacco. Moore's going to intercept it, you know.
It's that thin air in Denver. Carries the ball.
It was so bad. I couldn't believe it. Jacoby Jones, his eyes got as big as saucers. He's like, you're going to let me get behind you?
That's another thing. Not only was the play on the ball so atrocious, but as a safety, as a defensive back, there's 30 seconds left on the game. You know the number one rule, football 101, you don't let anyone get behind you. Why would you go up for the ball on that kind of play? Not only were you so short, that was mistake number one. You were ridiculously short on the ball. But the biggest factor is he shouldn't have even gotten behind him. Could have just let Jacoby Jones make the catch and then tackle him. The Ravens would have to run down the sideline, run down the field. Maybe they had a timeout left, I don't remember. But you still have some hope, 20 so seconds on the clock, and now you're playing still with the lead. Instead of giving up a 70-yard touchdown to tie the game, that's just terrible.
And it makes – hey, there's plays like that make people like Kevin Collins a genius.
Right. Yeah.
You know? Bill, Kevin, you spot Peyton Manning two special teams touchdowns at home in a playoff game, and you lose. If you're a Denver fan right now,
you can't be happy.
Oh,
my God.
And I don't want to hear all this nonsense about Peyton can't throw in the cold and the weather affected him. No, I don't want to hear any of that. They lost the game, all right? You mentioned the special team touchdowns, Todd, but how about the fact that when even with 31 seconds left on the clock, the Broncos decided to take a knee? What was up with that?
I thought that was pretty, you know,
Well, now we're throwing John Fox to the coaching blunder mistakes.
I think that was pretty wussy.
You take a knee with Peyton Manning
at home. Yeah, you at least try to do something, and then
percentage pass.
Yeah, and then if it doesn't work out and that first play goes awry, then you just let the clock
run. Matt Prater is a excellent field goal kicker, especially when he's playing in Denver, because again, that air is so thin up there. But you have to think that after that huge, embarrassing 70-yard touchdown to tie the game, the Broncos were like, "Well, you know what? After that play, we don't want anything else to go wrong."
Yeah, they
don't want Payne to
really
throw
really cautious in overtime
right.
with the play, exactly. conservative with the play call.
Exactly.
I got to tell you what, though, guys. One of the plays that stood out to me that I noted in that overtime, you know, we talk about Jacoby Jones's catch, and obviously they don't get to overtime without that. But an underrated play, it was a quick series of events that happened where Denver had a second and I think two on their own 38. And weren't able to convert on second and third down. I think they ran Ronnie Hillman twice, and he got stuffed. It might have been Jacob Hester on the third down carry. So they punt, and they put Ed Reed back to return. And Ed Reed gets kind of caught in no man's land, catches the ball at his five, which probably wasn't the brightest idea. Probably should have let that ball go. But he catches the ball at his five and gets tackled by Tony Carter right in his tracks at the 5 or 6 yard line. I think they gave him progress to the six. So now Baltimore's all sorts of backed up here.
Yep.
And if they punt from this position, they're I think that you can make the argument that the game's over. And Flacco did not realize on that series of downs, it was third and six or something
there
like that.
There it is, Kevin. I got it right here for you. First and 10, Ray Rice up the middle for no gain.
Yep.
Second and 10 from the six, Flacco incomplete.
And then they called timeout. Remember the play clock was running down?
Delay of game.
Harbaugh was trying to call timeout, and did they not get it? And
they didn't get it.
They got backed up half the distance to the goal.
Now it's third and 13 from the three.
Yeah, and he hit Pitta on that seam route. And
beautiful.
Now nothing came of that drive, but it flipped the field.
Huge.
And it was just, I think you can make the argument that that's one of those little series of plays that doesn't necessarily show up in a lot of people's minds, but if you're really, really watching the game intelligently, you
Kevin,
can pick up
they
on that
wound
stuff.
Up. After they punted, after they got a few first downs and punted, Broncos had a first and 10 from their own seven.
Seven, yeah, because I believe whoever 22 is something Smith? Is it like Jimmy Smith?
Jimmy Smith, yeah.
He made a great special teams tackle on Holiday.
They tried to go big
time
again.
Who was trying, had been, you can say, feeling it after those two. He had a punt return and a kick return for touchdown, so I don't blame him for trying to get his hands on the ball and make a play. But, you know, Smith made a great play, caught him from kind of a side angle and dragged him down. And I think actually Holiday went backwards on that play.
He caught it at the 14, wound up going minus 7 yards.
Yeah, so that play to Pitta really stood out. And I was like, okay, I got to remember this play.
Totally agree. And if you see Pitta get up, like, you could almost smell it. Like, he just had a little bit of swagger. When he caught that ball, bounced right up.
And I got to give Flacco credit on that one, Todd. That was he had the linebacker underneath with his back to Flacco, and he had safety help over the top, and the safety tried to lower the boom on the play and sort of whiffed. I think it might have been Jim Leonard who kind of like whiffed on trying to hit Pitta.
Yeah, he's the one that was credited with the tackle on that play.
Exactly.
And Kevin, what the plays like that I think that you can't appreciate those until they give you the behind the quarterback camera angle.
Yes.
Right. The angle, the floating candle camera that's over the field. They gave us that, and you're looking at that, and when he's about to throw it, I mean, you can't see where he's trying to throw it.
No.
You know what I mean?
I mean, he's looking at, I got a linebacker with his back to me. He can't see the ball coming.
Right.
And I got a big guy with a size advantage who's got a step, and I just have to hope that if I lay this thing up there, he can go get it and not get decapitated by the safety that's coming from over the top. And, you know, that's a play that we've seen here in New England with Gronk a lot, and it's a play that they haven't been able to run without him. Hernandez, more of a, kind of a wide receiver. We've talked a lot about it. Does a lot of crossing routes, can go deep, line up in the backfield. Humanao Nui, Belichick calls him Human, which makes me laugh.
Yeah.
But, he caught one deep ball in the San Francisco game, but he's just not – he's built like a truck, but he doesn't have that height and size and speed that Gronk has to get down the seam and stretch those backers vertically. So that's an element of the offense that has been missing here. When I saw Pitta make that play, I kind of paralleled it to our offense here and kind of thought, oh man, that's a play that I haven't seen run in the last 2 months. But it was a huge play that I think not a lot of people probably noticed at the time. But, you know, those of you are listening that are, you know, really, really love football and love situational football, it was a great, great moment
Well, like you said, I mean, Kevin, think of it this way. You know, Denver winds up getting out on their own seven.
Yep.
And they move the ball 31 yards.
They did.
And then he throws the interception.
Yeah, so, I think the point you're trying to make, Todd, is if they punt from there and get the ball in midfield and they move the ball 30 yards, it's over.
Yep.
You know, so it's one of those things where this is why I love playoff football so much, is because you can dissect like every play. It's so great.
And how about that interception, was that Favre-esque or what?
Yeah, across the grain, across the body, just bad decision.
Kevin,
the thing is though, Stokely had him beat.
Yes, he did. He had a step on him going toward the middle. It was just a bad throw.
Bad throw.
Yep, I was telling Bill this earlier today, Kev. I was watching, you know, the NFL Films show earlier in the day, and they had one. They were showing one of the Broncos games earlier in the year where they had Peyton mic'd up. Okay, so you got to, you know, and they had the whole montage of all the plays of the game and all the funny things he said after each play and all that. And he threw a touchdown pass exactly like that across his body to Tammy or somebody.
Okay,
and as they were running off the field celebrating, he turns to Tammy and he goes, "That's the cardinal sin in football as quarterback. Can't throw across my body. We got away with it. Ha, ha, ha."
Yeah.
That type of thing. And then 6 hours later, I'm watching the game, and that's how he loses the game. It was
really
weird.
Small world.
Very weird.
Let's go, insurance and justice. Let's go.
Boy.
It's one of my new ones.
Boy.
I like that one.
It's one of my new ones.
And then the other thing, guys, that we talked about at the top of the show worth bringing up again is the practice kick.
Yes.
Because let me give you the timeline here. So they intercept Peyton Manning with 51 seconds left in the first overtime.
Okay.
At the Denver 45. They run a play or two, and then it's the end of the overtime. So they go to commercial break, right?
And as they're going to the break is when you see it, I think.
Right. Justin Tucker.
Because they sprinted out there.
And here's the deal. It was the first play of the second overtime was a third down.
Okay.
Right.
So they knew it was coming.
Well, they weren't even in field goal range, though, yet.
Ray Rice had that 11-yard run.
I am wrong. It was second and 10. The last play, Ray Rice runs for 11 yards to the 34.
And Yanda pushed him for the last 4 yards of that run, I think. It was a great play.
You're right. So you're right. It was they were at the 34-yard line, end of overtime. And then, what is going on? How does a kicker get to go out there and practice?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Have we heard anything official about that?
I haven't. I'd love to ask Belichick if I ever had the chance of what he thinks of that, because I'd be curious to know what he thought. Because if there was no rule against it, I guarantee you would have seen, he would have told Gostkowski to go out there and do it if we were in that situation.
I gotta believe that is some kind of break in intermission that it's allowed.
Yeah, it's probably treated like a halftime.
Because wouldn't you think that John Fox and the Broncos would have put up a bigger stink, not only during the game but publicly after if it was
against
the
rules? Right, I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, so exactly. I would think that it's just one of those things that there's no rule against it, but it might be frowned upon by, like, you know, the players actually taking part in the game, because Champ Bailey did not look happy. He looked confused, but also sort of like, check out this dude. Who does he think he is?
Right.
It's very strange. There was like one, and it was one kick, right? It was just one quick, or that's all we saw, at least. I don't know if there was more during the commercial.
They went to break. Could have been more.
Yeah, who knows?
Very odd. I'll tell you what, Kevin, if you're a Patriot fan.
Yeah.
This guy's a hell of a lot better than Cundiff.
Oh, yeah, he's great. He's had a great year.
This guy's had a good year.
Yep.
If it comes down to that, I don't...
As a matter of fact, I'd go down. He's had a much better year than Gostkowski, and I would... There's no argument for me. I would have more faith in him kicking a, you know, mid-40-yard field goal, 45, 46, than I would have Gostkowski kicking it, for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats here. Hold on a second.
Steve's had a tough year. He's had a down year.
Now, Kevin, you said you wanted the Ravens to win because you wanted to host the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
You'd be careful what you wish for. Ravens are looking good.
Yeah, no, they look great. But I just think that for our team to not have to get on that plane on Friday and lose an extra day, because generally East Coast teams go out to Denver or any West Coast city, especially Denver, though, somewhat early on a Friday to get out there and get acclimated. So you just kind of lose some preparation time and, you know, some practice time and, you know,
Game's on a Saturday, though.
No, the game's on Sunday.
The game's on Sunday, yes.
No, 6:30. I'm saying that the Ravens played last Saturday.
I'm just talking about us.
This game, I thought you were talking about the Ravens.
Yeah,
the Ravens
have an extra day. I'm just making the point of the Ravens have an extra day.
That's
you know, for them to have to get on that plane on Friday and then, you know, how your body reacts to flying. You get dehydrated, and then you're landing in a high altitude. Like, it's just – there's a lot of, like, kooky little things, and it's just less preparation time for these guys. So, and yeah. I think you can ask any of them, and they'd say, would much rather not have to worry about, like, you know, getting ready for the trip and, you know, lugging all our crap out there. And,
listen, I'm no doubt – I'm not saying that it's a –
but from a pure matchup standpoint, I see what you're saying, Bill. Yeah. It's going to be a really big challenge for these guys.
I wanted to see Brady versus Peyton. I did want
I think
to
a lot of people did. Yeah. I think a lot of people were disappointed.
Yeah, I am. I still can't believe the Broncos lost, actually. I actually woke up the next day and I was like, wow, the Broncos
weeping.
Really lost last night. No, I mean, I could care less that they lost. Other than the fact I wanted to see another.
You woke
Brady
up and you were like,
Peyton.
I can't believe that idiot Collins was right about something for once in his
that's
life.
That's actually as
for once in his life.
When that kick happened, that's as
by the way,
immediately
guys,
what I thought.
So Todd brought up a little interesting nugget here too. So the change of possession happens, the quarter or the overtime period ends, and they come back out.
Right.
And I think Ray Rice on that 11-yard run, Todd, if you have the play-by-play, probably got down to like what, the 36, 35, 34. 30.
Ray
Rice
had 34. A great game.
Okay, so we're at the 34, first and 10, and I think they ran Rice or some form of running back three times in a row there.
Here's what they did. Yes.
Right?
The first play of the overtime, first and 10 from 34, Ray Rice for 2 yards.
Okay.
Second and 8.
Yep.
Ray Rice for 1 yard.
And then they ran him again to get the ball in the middle of the field.
Third and 7, 2 yards.
Yeah. But so I don't know why, and I have a lot of faith in Tucker, but when I was watching it, I was still uncomfortable thinking, man, I would have liked to at least seen one high percentage pass, like a screen or something, just to try to get a little bit closer, get one more first down.
How about that? That's a good point. And, you know, both John Harbaugh and Smith from the Falcons, the same thing.
Yeah, it was a really conservative set of downs, those three plays, and I understand you don't want to turn the ball over and you might not trust Flacco to try to make a throw down the field there, but I just thought, hey, 46, 47 yards, that's no gimme.
Yeah, I wound up being a 47-yarder. Well, high altitude, the kid, he's made 32 of 35 kicks.
He's good. Good solid year.
So,
rookie kicker.
Interesting. Very interesting game. Just, you know what, though, Bill? We said, hey, we just want to see good games, and we got that.
We really got great games.
And when you get great games like this, all the fun is what we're doing right now, dissecting every piece of it and, like, second-guessing every little decision. It's amazing.
I love it.
Kevin, you don't get a chance to do this, but there are times, well, a lot of times, where Bill and I are following Twitter.
Yeah.
As, like, these crazy games unfold.
Yeah.
The one, of course, the crazy one was the Packers-Seahawks Monday night.
Yes.
Craziness. Twitter basically.
The official. Yeah, the replacement official. Yep.
Yeah. My iPhone like melted in my hand because the tweets were coming in. They were all so hilarious and stuff. I mean, it's just a crazy new element, a whole other layer to watching these games. And it's kind of addictive, don't you agree, Bill? Sometimes. Like there
I
are games.
Love,
what, do you like doing
having,
it?
I love it.
Because sometimes I like it, and sometimes it's just too much. Mm-hmm. It's so
I
distracting.
It.
I think if your team is playing, you might want to stray away from it a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you're just watching, you know, teams that you don't really necessarily care about, like most of the games this weekend, I think it can be a really cool element, a fan element.
You know why I like it? Because it's so instantaneous that some people, their initial reactions are so ridiculous. There's this guy from CBS that I follow. He does their fantasy football stuff. After Trindon Holiday ran back the first kickoff or the punt return for the touchdown, it was 7-0 first quarter. And he writes, Holiday, 7-0 Broncos, game over.
Wow.
Like, are you in, like, what a tool.
That's what my roommate said to me and started taunting me for my Ravens pick.
Yeah, like, so ridiculous.
So then it got personal.
There's still three more quarters left, and then there actually happen to be five more quarters left because of the double overtime.
But Todd, you drilled it. Like, I can never do this. So to be able to sit there and watch especially Saturday, two really good games.
Yeah,
that were
great.
Just really entertaining, and to text back and forth with you guys and a couple other guys, it's just what like football is all about to me. You know,
that's why I love being a football fan. I love
it. Nothing like it.
All right, what do you say we take a quick break? Our friend Kerry Byrne from ColdHardFootballFacts.com will join us in the next segment. We'll be right back on Patriots.com Radio.
Every football fan has a voice at FootballNation.com.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios Internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriot scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo sacks at Gerard Mayo speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds are 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but like basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
You're as cold as ice.
You don't look at stats or chicken wings the way Kerry Byrne does. It's time for the cold, hard football facts right here on Football Nation.
All right, welcome back to Football Nation. Bill and Todd hanging out. And our good friend of the show, Kerry Byrne from coldhardfootballfacts.com, now joins us. Kerry, what do you think of the exciting football NFL divisional playoffs?
I loved it, guys. It got the bad taste of the wild card round out of the collective mouths of the pigskin public. I thought it was a great weekend of football.
Well, were you shocked? I was shocked. I was actually waking up the next day, still couldn't believe it. Were you shocked the Broncos and the Seahawks lost?
You know, there's two ways of looking at it. One, I mean, Seattle, I thought, was the best team in football, okay? The best team in the NFC, anyway. Let me put it that way.
Right.
And you know, they're a team that blew their opportunities. They, you know, the Marshawn Lynch fumble, you know, inside Atlanta territory, coming away with 0 points deep in Atlanta territory at the end of the first half. Nice. Is that what a Seahawks sounds like?
That's what every bird in the NFL sounds like.
The uniform.
Ravens, bird, Eagle, Cardinal, Ravens, Falcon, Seahawks, Falcon.
I think that's Kevin Collins when he doesn't see sunlight for 3 days on end.
Yeah.
Screaming for help. You know, so I think Seattle, kind of putting themselves behind the eight ball, I think the way they fought back was indicative of what I thought was largely a better team. But in this case, they didn't take care of their opportunities and took away lead and gave up credit to Matt Ryan and the Falcons. You know, gave up, you know, well, let's not say the Seahawks gave it up. You know, Matt Ryan and the Falcons produced two great passes to get into field goal position. And in an epic 30-second drive, we have to redefine the two-minute drive, guys. We've seen guys this season now execute 30-second drives in the modern NFL. Which, now to bring it to the other game, you know, was I shocked to see the Broncos lose? Talk about a team that didn't play to win. I mean, twice at the end of the first half and at the end of regulation, they sat on the ball with 30 seconds left. And
I couldn't believe
that. That's shocking, guys. And for a team to be a number one seed, to have two special teams touchdowns, to have to seemingly have everything needed to win at home, in the cold, again, with rest, you know, with a better defense, with a better offense, with supposedly a better quarterback, to not win that game is kind of shocking. But if you look at Peyton Manning's track record, it's full of shocking losses in games that his team should have won.
Kerry, you're a football historian. When was the last time there was a double overtime game in the playoffs? Do you know?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head. I know there's only been a couple, and I know the first was the back in, what, the 1972 or 71 playoffs. The Chiefs and Dolphins had, like, a triple overtime game, which may still be the longest in history.
Yeah.
That's going back old school. I honestly don't know off the top of my head how many double overtime games there have been, but not many. I think this ended up being, like, the fourth longest playoff game in NFL history, something like that. So it was definitely a rare event.
Kerry, you talked about Peyton Manning, and I was reading your website today, and he hasn't have a great history in his first playoff games of the year. He has a lot of early exits. Can you expand on that a little bit for us?
Well, you know, I think by now the 8-1 and done have kind of become
8-1 and done.
You know, I think everybody knows that it's kind of been well so publicized. We've been talking about it for years, guys, and it's not just losing in the first round without a victory. It's having great teams that lose. It's having teams that dominate the regular season that consistently fail to execute in the postseason, guys. It's not like it's happened once or twice now. It's happened 8 times, and some of the more notable ones among all those, the 2005 Colts, guys. Now, 14-2, the AFC's number one seed, and more importantly, number two in scoring defense.
Right.
They lost 21-18 to the Steelers. Mm-hmm. The 2007 Colts, 13-3, the number two seed behind the undefeated Patriots. Number one in scoring defense, guys. They failed to win a playoff game.
Wow.
Both of those at home. and then this year, the 2012 Broncos, 13-3, the number one seed. Number four in scoring defense, and again, failed to win a single playoff game. The storyline on Manning was always, well, he didn't have a great defense. But those are three teams with great defenses that failed to win a game. And usually what happens, Peyton Manning's teams in his 11 playoff losses have averaged about 17 points per game.
Wow.
They don't score points. And actually, our own Captain Comeback today at Cold Hard Football Facts kind of wrote a counterpoint to the article I just read to you, saying that Peyton Manning is actually a victim of circumstance, and a lot of things have gone wrong, a lot of things have gone against him. And he does a great job quantifying that. But my argument, when Scott and I talk kind of offline, Scott, they don't score points. That's on the quarterback. When you're scoring 30 points per game in the regular season and 15, 16, 17 in the playoffs, that's not because of a dropped pass or a missed field goal. That's because your quarterback is underperforming. The reality is he's not as good in the playoffs as he is in the regular season, and the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in the wins and losses. The proof is in the points on the scoreboard. In fact, guys, I went back and looked at, in 9 of his 11 playoff losses, his teams have scored 18 points or less. Can you believe that?
Wow.
And nine of 11?
Hold on a second. 9 of the 11 losses, 18 or less.
18 points or less, okay?
And you know what, Kerry? I mean, you know, again, you can twist the stats however you want, but he only scored 17 offensive points in this game.
Yeah, was it 17 or 21?
Oh, 21, sorry. 21,
yeah. Still, yeah, so I'm looking at him right now on the losses, guys. 0 points, 3 points, 17 points, 14 points, 17 points, 17 points. 24 points, 18 points, 16 points, 16 points, and then, of course, this week, 35. But that's still 9 of 11, 17, 18 points or less. I looked up the numbers throughout history. If you score 18 points or less, you win 15% of NFL games.
Wow.
So he's lost because he hasn't scored points. He's not played winning football, and I don't care what the reasons are. That's on the quarterback. You can't give Peyton Manning all the credit in the world when he's going 12-3, doing 12-4 and 14-2 every regular season, and then blame everybody else when he loses in the postseason. That's not how it works, gentlemen.
Now, Kerry, on the flip side of that, Tom Brady actually broke Joe Montana postseason record. Brady is now the all-time winningest quarterback in the postseason. What do you see as, you know, Brady Peyton? I mean, this is obviously another notch toward the Brady side of the argument.
Hey, you know what we did? Back in 2004, what put Colt out on the map is declaring Tom Brady better than Peyton Manning back then. Back before it was cool and when nobody believed it, and it actually took, you know, three Super Bowl victories by Tom Brady's Patriots before people even put him in the same category. But the reality is Tom Brady's always done all the little things correct to win and lose games, a very low turnover rate, a very high touchdown-to-deception ratio, clutch in big games. And those have always been the hallmarks of his career. And that's actually been tarnished a little bit in Brady's case in recent years with the losses to the Giants and a bad loss to the Ravens in the 2009 playoffs. But still, by any measure, if you look at Tom Brady by any measure, he's among the best ever in the postseason in the history of football. I don't think it's a debate anymore, guys. I don't think it's a debate in any way. Tom Brady is the dominant quarterback of our time by any measure, whether you want to look at stats, whether you want to look at victories, whether you want to look at postseason. Brady's playing in the AFC title game for the seventh time in 11 seasons.
Yeah, that's just happening.
It's sick.
Yeah, it really is.
And that's, it's a great team, it's a great organization, but, you know, the NFL is all about the quarterback. He consistently outplays the other quarterback. It's simple as that. And, we're talking sick numbers that aren't supposed to be possible, and you have to give, I say it's not even a competition anymore. I don't know if you guys think there's still a Brady Manning debate, but to me it ended years ago, and I don't know if anyone would make the argument otherwise in this day and age.
Kerry, there was another debate that was raging on the past month or so, and that was who's the rookie of the year.
Yep.
And I think that has been put to bed as well. I don't know when they do the voting for these things, but if they wait till the playoffs and you saw what Russell Wilson did even in defeat, he's got to be a rookie of the year. You agree?
Hey, he was my rookie of the year beforehand. I mean, we loved what he did. I thought he was kind of underrated, underappreciated. I think he is. Show me in two playoff games how really effective he is, and I think that kind of whole nation, and you guys see it. Seattle kind of gets underestimated because they're so physically far removed from the rest of the NFL. It's actually so geographically isolated. The Seattle Seahawks have the longest travel schedule in football every single year because they're just so isolated, you know?
Yeah,
so
Canada.
People, they don't get on TV. They don't get on national TV. Plus being a third-round pick, being undersized, he didn't have the hype of RG3 or Andrew Luck, but clearly, he was a better quarterback than Andrew Luck this year. I don't know how people would argue Andrew Luck.
I think he was clearly better than both of them. I mean, especially now, RG3, once he got hurt, he definitely, he couldn't play his style of game any longer, and that plays into this. But there's no doubt about it. Russell Wilson was the best rookie quarterback and probably the best rookie of the year, regardless. He was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I still think you can make a case for RG3, but I think Russell Wilson, I mean, how about him? You know, running downfield, making blocks on two or three, downfield blocks on two or three runs against the Redskins, and then kind of willing his team back and really having a great performance and coming through with a clutch touchdown drive on the road against the Falcons. I mean, that was a game he should have won, and, if not for some Matt Ryan heroics, the Seattle Seahawks would be going to San Francisco right now.
Only mistake he made, Kerry, he took a bad sack at the end of that half.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, they kind of just mismanaged the whole thing there, I thought. Besides, the sack was obviously a big part of it, but they didn't really execute there well. So, and that might have cost them the game, guys.
It might have.
Hey. But he's still, he's a guy making, his 18th NFL start. I really like what I saw out of him. I think he's a lot of fun to watch, and he's a charismatic player, and he does it all. He really does.
You know, Russell Wilson, Kerry, I did a lot of radio last draft season, and he got a lot of flack because of his height, right? And, he isn't that big strapping 6'3", 6'4", type guy. He's really 5'11". But here's the thing, Kerry. Okay, so what's the problem when you're not tall in the NFL? You can't see over your offensive line, right?
Yeah.
Well, when he was at Wisconsin, Kerry, they did a study, or just did some simple math. The Wisconsin O-line, those behemoths, if you put them in the NFL, they would have been the fourth largest line in the NFL. So the argument back then was, if he can see and get it done at Wisconsin, he shouldn't have any problem from that perspective. The speed of the game's different, but as far as seeing, the passing lanes and seeing over the linemen, it's really no different.
Well, and two things on that. the way it's, and I obviously didn't play pro football, but the way it's always been described to me by players and ex-players is that the big difference from the college, the big difference from high school to college, the big difference from college to the pros is not that everyone's big, it's that everybody's fast.
Right.
Everyone's big, and these kids playing Division I football, if you're playing Big Ten SEC football, these kids are all 6'4", 300 pounds now. There's no 6'1", 250-pound linemen playing in major college football. They are big, big boys. It's not the size difference that's big from going from college to the NFL.
Speed.
It's the speed and the athleticism, and that I hear that from everybody. I've had players and ex-players tell that to me directly. That's really the big difference. The other thing, Todd, nobody sees over the offensive line. I don't care if you're 6'4". These guys in front of you are 6'4", 6'6", 6'8", with helmets on. You're not, you know what I mean? You're throwing through lanes. You're throwing to predetermined spots. You're throwing on rhythm. You're getting outside the pocket. But nobody is looking over their offensive line to get the ball downfield. They're looking through lanes, and they're running a rhythm and a system. That's kind of how it works. So, yeah, you'd rather be 6'5 than 5'11", but if you're a good quarterback, you know, Drew Brees is barely 6 feet tall, and he's been the most deadly accurate, productive passer in football the last 5 years.
Right. Well, I don't know why these scouts continue to, you know, to use height against these guys.
Listen, you're talking to the, you know, the cold hard football facts are loyal only to the numbers, but I am the world's biggest Doug Flutie fan. That was a guy who could play in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, he was highly productive in the NFL. He went to the playoffs with several different teams. That stigma, that size, because he was actually even shorter than Russell Wilson, of course, that size haunted his career. Nobody gave him a legit shot. It seems, Russell Wilson is obviously getting that shot, being a little bigger and maybe, you know, a little more muscular and a different kind of player than we saw, you know, 30 years ago. But it's obviously, you know, a guy like Doug Flutie could play in the NFL and wasn't allowed to because of the height issue.
Kerry Byrne from coldhardfootballfacts.com. You can listen to his show tomorrow. What time are you on, Kerry?
We're going to be on 2 o'clock as well. Normally 4 o'clock. We're moving to 2 o'clock like you guys a little early here in the run-up to the big AFC title game.
Yeah, love it.
At Gillette Stadium.
All right, Kerry, we appreciate you joining us. And don't forget, check out more of Kerry's stuff at coldhardfootballfacts.com.
Thanks, Kerry. Bill, you know, Kerry's spot on. But there were a couple prominent national broadcasters this weekend that weren't spot on. There was some analysis coming through my TV set that had me completely bamboozled. Do you agree with me?
I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Yes. Kevin, are you out there?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Which one do you want first?
Billick.
Why don't you go with Brian Billick, though? I don't know which clips you have, but he said a lot of weird things. And let me just give a quick, you know, backstory here. You know, it was found out that he interviewed for the Philadelphia Eagles head coaching job, okay, last week. So I can tell you that in the Philadelphia area, they were keeping a close eye on that broadcast because a potential future head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles was broadcasting the game. Let's hear him talk. Maybe he'll give us some strategy, some insight. He might be the new coach for the Eagles. And especially
this win right here legitimizes the Seattle Seahawks as the number one seed and makes them the team to beat. Let's go downstairs to lock.
Oh, boy.
Hopefully you were listening close, because he says that legitimizes the Seattle Seahawks as the number one seed. The Seahawks lost the game, Coach Billick. What were you talking about?
No idea. Well, even worse was, and I don't know if you have this one, Kevin. It might be on that same site that you're on there or wherever you have it.
I'll look for it. What is it?
If you page down. But he's talking about Seattle's down 6, right? And there's 44 seconds left, and they're in Atlanta territory, but they're like at the 40-yard line or something.
I think I got it here.
Got it?
Let's see. See what.
They're down 6.
It's buffering.
44 seconds left.
It's buffering. It's buffering.
Buffering?
Trying to stall.
Stretch.
Damn Bill and his crappy web pages he sends me.
Blame it on Bill. I love it.
Who sent me this garbage?
I don't manage that website.
That is true. It's a bad website.
FootballNation.com. You never have those problems.
No. Well, I'll try to get it. I'll let you know when I have it.
All right. So basically, the bottom line is, Bill, the Seahawks are down 6. Okay. You know, as a fan, you kind of become a coach when you're watching these games. What would I do here? It's pretty obvious when you're down 6 what you need to do when there's 44 seconds left.
Of course.
You need a freaking touchdown.
Yeah.
Okay? They're in Atlanta territory, and he's talking about kicking a field goal and then kicking an onside kick and getting that and then kicking another field goal.
Which would
tie
the game.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know what he's talking about.
I don't know what he was talking about either.
It's not like there's 5 minutes and 44 seconds left. There's 44 seconds left in the game, and this is what he's spouting off. And then he follows that up with the clip that Kevin just played there, that the Seahawks won the game.
All right, let's see if it works this time.
Yeah. All right.
Nope, not working.
Doesn't sound like it's working, Kev.
No.
That's going to be the case. I think you're third down. If they don't convert here, you're in that distance where you could fake field goal. Onside kick, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you're in four down territory here, unless, of course, you get sacked out of, right now you're sitting here at a third and, what is it, a third and five, you get sacked out of it, that would change the equation. This is likely four down territory.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, right?
You think? It's like, now, again, I know that the Philadelphia area was watching this game closely because of him, and the Philadelphia fans have been very hard on Andy Reid for the past 14 years because of his mismanaging of the final minutes of a game. So I can tell you that these fans were not too impressed with the words of Mr. Billick there. It might be four down territory, Bill. Might be. It's only a playoff game and you're down 6 and you're at their 40-yard line or whatever.
Now, the next commentator that we're going to discuss is Phil Simms, and we kind of had a Phil Simms, Jim Nance run-in earlier in the year with the Patriots when Jim Nance said, you know, after the Patriots won in overtime, Jim Nance said the Jets won in overtime. This time around, AFC divisional matchup, Texans and Patriots, you know, Phil Simms clearly can't do some simple addition. Kevin, play the clip.
41, the 30 seconds.
Well, you know what you do? Maybe get one more completion. If it's out, if you can get out of bounds, spike the ball, whatever, and try a long field goal to give yourself a chance maybe to throw one in the end zone if you can recover an onside kick.
I don't think that would do you much good. 13.
Oh, that's right. I'm going to pick it up.
I love Nance there. I don't think it's going to do you much good.
Gene.
Well, the Nance part is the best. Is the best because he's like, nah, Phil. You know, it's not really going
to
work.
You may want to take the next play. You may want to take the next play off there, Phil.
Well, it's great because Todd, you pointed out there was only like 20 seconds left on the clock. Like,
correct.
Phil, do you really think all that is going to really come to fruition? Kick a long field goal, get the onside kick, and then go for the Hail Mary. Which, by the way, that wouldn't even work because that's only 10 points. See, Texans were down 13 at the time.
I don't understand it. Wasn't this guy a Super Bowl-winning quarterback?
Yeah, but apparently you don't have to do
that. Brian Billick won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. I don't understand it. What happens to these guys?
Math is not a big part of the Wunderlich test, I'm told.
I don't understand it.
Now, Todd, you're down in the Philly area, right? Or that's where you're from.
Yep.
Are people – what's the feeling? Like, what's their number one choice down there?
They just want it to be over with.
Okay, they just want some closure and to be able to move on with whoever.
Yeah, I think right now, and again, and I work in the football industry. I don't know anything about Gus Bradley, really, honestly, the defensive coordinator from the Seahawks. But right now, he's kind of the name that they might be closing in on as we tape the show. Mm. But I think at this point, you know, the fan base hears a name. They hear one guy say he's a great candidate, so then they love him, you know, but they don't know anything about him. It's not like guys like Gruden and Tony Dungy or Cowher that you've seen them. You know what their track record is. Let's be honest. The three of us don't know a lot about most of these coaching candidates that are out there that are like offensive coordinators, or quarterback coaches. We don't know a lot about them.
No.
You know, so you just got to, you know.
The Chargers did hire the Broncos head offensive coordinator, though.
Yes, McCoy.
Yeah, Mike McCoy.
So that could be good for Philip Rivers, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah, so, you know, the coaching carousel goes round and round, but again, those announcers, Bill, I just don't get it. Like, how can you not know
what's going on in the game?
Yeah, I just never understood it. And you see it on the field a lot, too, with coaches. We just talked about the coaching blunders we saw in these games, right?
Well, who's going to get the, you know, Blunder of the Week award? We got Pete Carroll. Now, here are the mistakes for the Seahawks, right?
Right.
They don't give the ball to Marshawn Lynch, 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1.
They do a bad play call. Russell Wilson ends up getting sacked. No time left in the to end the first half. And then the whole, you know, I didn't call a timeout and I didn't try to ice the kicker. That's Pete Carroll. John Fox of the Broncos, what did he do wrong, all right? First, he doesn't go for it with 30 seconds left in the game when the Ravens just tied the score. They run the ball three times in a row. They don't let Peyton Manning pass on 3rd and 7 in overtime. And then Atlanta Falcons head coach Mike Smith had that squib kick gone wrong, which could have really cost the Falcons the game. Now, I think we eliminate Mike Smith because the Falcons did end up winning. So let's get rid of him. To me, it's between Pete Carroll and John Fox and the Denver coaches.
I got to go with Carroll.
Bonehead coach of the week. Kevin says Carroll. Todd says Carroll.
I think it's Carroll because I think what he did was really cost them the game. I mean, more so than even – I mean, you can debate, and I think I fall in the camp that you guys fall in. They should have gone for it. It's a freaking playoff game. You know, you have Peyton Manning, go for the win.
Yeah.
Right.
But Seattle, I mean, they took points off the board.
Yeah, I agree. And so all three of us are in agreement. And the other thing is, you know, Peyton turning the ball over three times, that led to 17 Baltimore points. There was a good element of player error in that game.
Of course,
as well.
Morris,
Yeah, right. So I think that's why I have to go
with
Pete.
I think if you're close with those two, what tips it in the scale, the way of Carroll is him smugly, knowing the cameras are on him, pretending that he didn't call the timeout.
Right. So ridiculous.
What are you doing? You know? I mean, you just watch him, and he's so swarthy when he does that kind of stuff.
Well, listen, that was the NFL divisional games. Excellent group of games. AFC Championship. Patriots versus the Baltimore Ravens this weekend. NFC Championship. 49ers visit the Atlanta Falcons. The winner goes to the Super Bowl in New Orleans. We're going to preview those games on Thursday. We're looking forward to it. Gentlemen, any last words before we cut this thing off?
Nope, it was fun. I had the most fun that I've had in a long time, just being able to like dissect games that I actually got to watch.
Yeah, great.
I'll tell you what, we learned a lot about Kevin. We learned a lot about Kevin Collins in the show, Bill. A couple things. Number one, we learned that he's not too proud to shove it in our faces when he's better than us in predictions.
He loves it.
It took, 18, 19 weeks, but he finally did it.
Not bad.
And the first 3 minutes of the show were proof positive of that. Go listen to it on iTunes.
Yep.
Where he basically pounds his chest the whole first 3 minutes.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So we learned a little bit about Kevin in that respect. We also learned that the man is a pyrotechnic master.
I love
That's
fire.
Right.
I love fire.
Right? And he coordinates and orchestrates flyovers, stadium flyovers.
It's great.
I'm a maestro.
If you were upset with any of the Patriots pre-game celebrations, now you know who to blame.
It's
Kevin Collins.
Call us. Call us and complain. You don't.
All of a sudden, the phones are overrun.
You didn't see enough fire coming out of
70,000 people calling.
Are all the fireworks going off for Stephen Gostkowski and none for the rest of the team?
Yeah, it's me.
You call.
That's me. I'm the guy. I'm your man.
You know that Apache helicopter a little too close for your taste?
Yeah, Kevin.
Give us a ring.
Kevin, we are back Thursday, 4 o'clock, right? Not 2 o'clock.
That is correct. 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock rather. Yes.
And John Rook show, is he going to be back on Thursday?
Rook is back in the fold on Thursday at 2. So we'll have a full lineup leading up to the AFC title game. We'll have PFW in progress at noon, Patriots playbook at 2, and Football Nation at 4. Back in the saddle.
All right, we're looking forward to a big time matchup, AFC Championship, Patriots and Ravens. We'll preview that game on Thursday, 4 o'clock here on Football Nation. Thank you for listening to Patriots.com Radio.
Football Nation, the pulse of NFL fans everywhere.